Hello and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retal.
We're going to be doing a roundtable discussion. With me is, of course, my co-host as always, Bob Retal. How you doing, Bob?
Very good, John.
And joining us once again is Chris Marshall from the Collected Comics Library. How you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm doing good. Good to be here, John and Bob.
Well, we want to thank you not only for coming, but suggesting the topic this time, Chris. You had a brilliant idea of taking a look at the Justice Society of America, the 12, and Project Superpowers, and how they're kind of doing a modern golden age these days, bringing a lot of these obscure characters back, and in some cases doing some really interesting stuff with them. So, where do you guys want to start the discussion?
I don't know. Do you want to start with the less familiar or the more familiar? I mean, JSA is obviously the one that we're more familiar with the characters, since DC has been keeping a lot of them alive, at least since the 80s, you know, with Roy Thomas.
That works for me. Or go ahead.
Let's real quick run down the titles of what we're going to talk about tonight. The first one being the Justice Society of America. The next one being the 12. The next one after that would be Project Superpowers. And then I think we're going to touch on the next issue project from Image Comics. And that one is right now, it's got the Fantastic Comics number 24 out. And then anything else we want to talk about. What was the other one, John? You and I were talking about just the other day.
Terra Obscura. Given the
Terra
characters,
Obscura, thank you.
Given the characters, particularly in Project Superpower, and to a lesser degree the 12 and stuff, I really think that Terra Obscura almost has to be talked about because they're some of the same characters.
Okay.
So
that's what's on tap anyway.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the Justice Society of America. I'm loving this title. It's Jeff Johns. The guy is just a brilliant writer. What I think makes this one kind of stand out from the other ones we're going to talk about is, like you were saying, Bob, these are characters that, while they went away for a while, they've been back for decades. I mean, with Roy Thomas's work on All-Star Squadron and Infinity Inc. in the 80s, there was a shorter-lived JSA series that ran about 10 issues in the 90s. And then, of course, this Justice Society of America and the JSA title itself had been going on for most of the last 10 years. So these characters are, I think, very familiar to readers these days, or at least have the opportunity to be very familiar to readers these days. And it's interesting how these are characters that, for the most part, had kind of grown old during this time, whereas certainly in the 12 and to a lesser degree in Project Superpower, those characters are kind of doing the Captain America bit where they, you know, are out of play for a bit and then come into the modern age as a fish out of water. So I find that juxtaposition kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think, you know, in Justice Society, other than, you know, what we can talk about with some of the legacy characters, and actually the new run is a lot of, you know, the legacy in the sense of new versions for the most part, or next generation of some of the older characters. They've got a few of the old guard in there, like Alan Scott and Jay Garrick, Ted Grant, Wildcat, and things like that. But a lot of the characters are new, which is kind of interesting, seeing the next generation. But one thing, though, we're going to specifically talk about issues 12 and 13. Something that I found very interesting here was the reintroduction of Mr. America. And we haven't seen Mr. America very much at all, if at all, you know, that I recall, for a really long time. So he really was kind of a reintroduction of somebody from quite a long time ago.
That's a good point, because at best he may have been a token player once or twice in All-Star Squadron.
Right.
But I'm not even sure if he did that.
I seem to have a vague recollection of the costume and the character, but not much more than that. So, you know, he hasn't been around that much, and certainly nothing like some of the classic members of the Justice Society that we've seen a lot of. I mean, most notably, I think Wildcat, Green Lantern, and Flash, they've been relatively consistently around a lot. And then almost old guard are some of the ones that were brought in when they brought All-Star Squadron back the first time, continuing the original All-Star numbering back in the late 70s? You know, with the Power Girl, for instance, she's kind of like an old timer, you know, from that respect.
Well, it's interesting because they don't really have much from that era of the JSA, because that was when they had Power Girl,
Star Spangled Kid.
Yeah, I think Huntress was around a bit then. But a lot of those characters are kind of out of play, so we've got their replacements with the new Star Girl. You know, they haven't really got any kind of a connection with the Huntress to the JSA these days, and I'm okay with that. But it's interesting how, I mean, you brought up an excellent point with the legacy aspect of the JSA. And issue 12, I think, really kind of brought that home to a huge degree, where they go out and actively recruit more of these legacy heroes, which I thought was very fun and interesting, and diametrically opposed to what they're doing in the 12 and Project Superpower, where they're literally going back to the original or modern versions, modern retellings or modern takes, I guess, on the original characters. But these are still the guys from back in the day. Whereas now, you know, in the JSA, a lot of these are either the grandkid or the third or fourth successor to the title.
Which fits in with the DC universe because, you know, really those stories have been told on a relatively continuous basis since the 40s and 50s. You know, there was a little bit of a gap when they were pretty much just doing Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. But for the most part, there's a relatively unbroken line there. And it makes sense in that context, even with the reboots, for there to be more of a legacy. You know, if you flip to the 12... Chris, you've got the reprint of the Daring Mystery Comics.
Yes.
And I just saw the little bits of them that were reprinted in that zero issue of the 12. And boy, that looked like it sucked out loud. I mean, I can read the Golden Age DC stuff, you know, and get, you know, take it into the context that you're in. And I can enjoy a lot of those stories. You know, I've got a lot of the DC archives with the JSA characters. You know, I've got the Golden Age Flash, the Golden Age Dr. Fate, and Hawkman, right, and Starman, and Green Lantern, and Flash, and, you know, all the All-Star Squadron ones. And I've gone through and read those stories, as I'm sure you have, and they hold up to a large extent. But those characters in the 12, oof, that was some bad stuff. If that was what they had to hold up as an example, I appreciate the fact that somebody performed some archaeological dig and dredged up these characters to tell this new entertaining story with, but I am really not surprised they have lain unused for the last 50, 60 years, because those were some pretty terrible stories.
Well, I think that the Daring Mystery Masterworks is a prime number one example of how a lost era of something is being repackaged into something that's being recreated into a new image. I mean, if Straczynski and Weston were not doing this series, you know, Marvel would not be bringing out a Daring Mystery Masterworks. There's just no doubt about it. They'd bring out another Captain America or another Marvel Comics Masterworks. But, you know, to go beyond that, I mean, I'm, you know, a stickler when it comes to trades. Everybody knows that. And I compared on my show just a few weeks ago when this book first came out. You know, you're paying $60 retail for this, and you're also paying $60 retail for a, you know, Jack Kirby, Stan Lee work. Well, what, you know, on the surface, what's going to have more value? Well, obviously, it's the Kirby Lee stuff. And this stuff, you wouldn't pay $5 for. I mean, granted, it's hard to find, and I get all that, and the restoration is a lot. But, you know, for the material that you're getting and the artists and characters that mean more to you, you know, the Daring Mystery Masterworks are not that great.
Did they have like one story for each of the 12 characters in the 12, or what's a rundown of what was in that Masterworks?
Well, it's really just Daring Mystery Comics 1 through 4, and let me turn to the table of contents. It's got, for example, Daring Mystery number 1 opens up with the Fiery Mask, which is a Joe Simon story.
Right, so he's one of the 12, okay.
He's one of the 12. Let's see, there's the Laughing Mask. I don't know if that's the same character.
He's one of the Laughing Mask is another one of the 12.
Mr. E is in here. I know he's part of it.
He's one. Yeah.
The Phantom Reporter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there's a Rockman story in here.
Yep. Okay.
But I don't fully see the titles really don't give it that much of a clue exactly who is the character. Yeah, it's hard to say. The introduction is by Ronan Roe, and I'm not exactly sure who he is either.
He wrote a book, kind of one of these comic history books. I remember seeing, I don't remember exactly which one it was,
okay.
But you know, the type. It's not, I'm looking at on my shelf, you know, you have like, you know, Men of Tomorrow, Geeks, Gangsters, and The Birth of the Comic Book. Gerard Jones wrote that one.
Okay.
Ronan Roe wrote another one that I didn't buy. So I'll do a quick Amazon on him.
I think, you know, I'm sure that Marvel will do a second Daring Mystery Comics while, you know, the series is hot right now with Straczynski. You know, whether it's going to come out, you know, this is a 12-issue series, so it's going to end, what, next January or so, next March?
Yeah.
And I would imagine, you know, and we like to, when you bring out these types of books, we always call them, you know, put them on the fast track. I wouldn't be surprised in the least if we have another Daring Mystery Masterworks by the time Christmas rolls around or January,
right,
when the series is ending. And then people can pick up the hardcover when it comes out, and you can have, you know, your two Daring Mystery Masterworks and the hardcover of the 12 going side by side on your shelf.
Right. So Ronan Roe wrote Tales to Astonish, Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, and the American Comic Book Revolution, which is currently marked down to $4.99 on Amazon. So you can get that book very cheap.
Well, it's interesting in the 12, number 0, to compare those early stories they had and then, you know, look at what they do in the first and second issue of the series and how they've just totally reinvented some of these characters in some cases. Other cases, I think they're very true to the spirit and intent. And it's just interesting what a huge reinvention they had to do on a few of these characters, Rockman in particular. It's almost a matter of why even go back to that particular character if you're gonna make him seem, you know, like a completely unrelated one. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, speaking of the Rockman real quick, John, I knew I remembered seeing a Rockman story in the Masterworks. That Rockman story is actually in USA Comics Masterworks, which was also put out about a year ago, and that collects the Rockman story from USA Comics number 1. So I knew there was a Rockman story collected in one of these Masterworks, and there it is.
Well, they collect that same one in the 12 number 0, and man, the art on that,
right,
is
oof.
Yeah.
It's really bad, really bad. I don't know. Everyone knows, I'm imagining here, most people who are going to listen to this are familiar with the Justice Society type of characters. They're maybe not as familiar with the 12 characters, so maybe it's worth a little bit more going into the first two issues of the 12 that we got. I really liked these two issues, and I had extremely low expectations going into it based on, you know, what I had seen of, you know, what was published in the 50s on these characters. But I thought that Straczynski hit it out of the park on these issues. I really, really liked them. And, you know, there were just little moments. I know we don't want to go through them panel by panel, but there was one, I don't know if you guys noticed it, when they got caught by the Nazis there in the first issue,
mm-hmm,
in the page right before the staple. You have your comic there?
Yes.
Pulling it out now. So right before the staple.
So go to the page right before the staple. Look at the middle panel on the left, on the middle row on the left. Is this what a Nazi would do or not? Did you notice that when you read the book?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's got these heroes are all unconscious, and he's like copping a feel off of the Black Widow. Just dirty Nazi tainting,
yeah,
pure American heroines.
Well, I really liked this story. I think Straczynski did a very good job, particularly in the second issue, conveying, you know, what it would be like for these characters to suddenly find themselves 50, 60 years in the future. But, you know, at a high level, the basic premise of this story is essentially a team version of, again, what happened with Captain America. You know, you'd been fighting the good fight in World War II. Next thing you know, it's the turn of the century, and things are really different. So it's, I don't want to say an unoriginal concept or whatever, but, I mean, it's not that which makes this book. It's the execution of that concept. The things at the end of the first issue where one of the guys realizes that even though they've dressed up the people to be in the period costumes and whatnot, it's not that time. Things are different.
Yeah. You know? One thing that I'll differ this from Captain America is that when Stan Lee brought Captain America back, he brought Captain America back, put him directly into the Avengers. He's running around with S.H.I.E.L.D. almost continually in his own book over in Tales of Suspense and his solo stories over there. There was not a tremendous amount of fish out of water stuff that I recall being told with the Captain America character, because he got brought back almost directly into a very strong, you know, superhero kind of world, where Straczynski did a lot of nice stuff here with the, you know, kind of fish out of water kind of stuff. And I also thought he did an excellent job in the first issue with the narrative thread with the Phantom Reporter, where in a very elegant way, I thought, he introduced all these characters, kind of who they were, what their basic gig was, because, you know, he understood no one's going to know who the heck any of these guys are. So we got to bring people up to speed on them. And I thought he did that in an extremely masterful way.
Real quick, John, let me bring everybody up to speed on who exactly these 12 people are. If you allow me, I'll run them down real quick.
Sure.
And I want you guys to let me know if you've ever heard of these characters prior and from where. We have the original Black Widow, the Blue Blade, Captain Wonder, Dynamic Man, Electro, Fiery Mask, the Laughing Mask, Mastermind Excello, Mr. E and the Phantom Reporter, Rockman, and the Witness. And what's interesting, I mean, it can be confusing too, because Mr. E and the Phantom Reporter look almost alike, and then you've got two characters with the word mask in their names. So it, you know, that I found that a little bit confusing going back and forth, but the only one that I knew of was the Phantom Reporter. I don't know about you guys.
I don't think I knew of any of these. I mean, I've known of one or two characters with similar names. Mr. E, of course, there was a comic like that, and obviously the other Black Widow, but no, not really.
Yeah, Mastermind Excello seemed like a familiar name, but it was probably a different character. You know, same with, you know, there's been different Black Widows and, you know, different characters with the names, but these specific characters, I had never seen any of them at any point before.
Okay.
Now, flip side, over on Project Superpower, some of those characters I had seen elsewhere, specifically in Terra Obscura.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in that case, they're kind of diving into more familiar, at least more, at least an area that's already been mined, strip mined for ideas before.
But was Terra Obscura the first time you saw those characters then? Like the Green Llama or the Black Terror?
Probably. The publisher, Americomics, AC Comics, mm-hmm. tends to do a lot of public domain type characters, so I may have seen a few of those characters there. Mm-hmm. But the other thing with the Project Superpower is a few of the ones that seem to be quote-unquote more original or whatever seem pretty familiar, too. Specifically, the Scarab was pretty much the Blue Beetle type, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, I mean, a lot of these, particularly with the 12, they've been out of play for so long. You look back at the original stuff, it's like, yeah, they deserve to be out of play for that long. There's no inherent connection to these characters, but some of the costumes are variations of ones that we've seen before, or since, I should say. Specifically, what was the one like that? It was Captain Wonder is very similar to the basic Commander Steel, Citizen Steel, Steel stuff over in JSA. It's the basic red, white, and bluish, you know, costume. We've seen variations on Dynamic Man's costume, you know, for half a dozen electric-powered characters. So there was a little bit of a sense of almost familiarity, even though not really that, with some of the characters in the 12, particularly, again, Mr. E and the Phantom Reporter. Mm-hmm. Guys in suits with a mask and a cape. I mean, that there are a lot of characters like that, or at least there were back in the 40s. Mm-hmm. You know, some which, you know, you ditch the cape, you've got the Spirit, you've got Midnight, who was in a few issues of All-Star Squadron. So, you know, the basic archetypes were kind of sort of familiar.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a story that, with the 12, really benefited from having someone in the story narrate it. And having the Phantom Reporter do that was a logical choice, and like Bob was saying, a very effective one, because it gave a chance to kind of editorialize on, well, this guy always thought he was from the future, and now he's believing his own hype type thing, you know. It's hard to convey that in the story without somebody almost flat out saying it, which, you know, the narrator in this case did. So I thought that was a smart move and a very effective move.
Mm-hmm.
But I also thought, you know, the second issue of the 12 just was really interesting in the different ways that the characters were coming to grips with what the future was like and what their place of it in it might be.
Well, that's something they really never explored with Captain America when he was unfrozen.
Well, maybe not initially, but
I
thought later in the run they, you know, picked up on some of the fish out of water aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they definitely did, but it was much later, like probably more like in the 70s almost.
Right.
Okay.
That they did that. It was, or maybe late 60s. It was well past, I think, the Stan Lee era.
Yeah.
When maybe Englehart had taken over or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, and that's one of those that enough additional time had elapsed that it was a further jump, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's working to Straczynski's advantage with the 12 is, sure, they kind of went into suspended animation or whatever, you know, shortly after Captain America did.
Mm-hmm.
But he came out, storytelling-wise, published in the 60s. Here we are in 2008 when this is told.
Right.
And even in the Marvel Universe timeline, Captain America's been thought out for probably at least 10 years.
Right, right. I thought it was interesting how they set them up, like, in their own little house and kind of made things appear to be in their time. It was kind of like a Twilight Zone type thing. You know, it was almost like they were on their own little 1940s prison, which I think one of the guys mentioned, you know, and they walk out and they you know, why is this kind of different? Why is that kind of different? You know, the one guy noticed that the skirt on the woman was too high, you know, little things like that. I thought that was kind of a cool little added bonus.
Yeah, that was in the hospital. I thought it was great that they showed the observational powers of the Phantom Reporter, that he kind of figured out that it wasn't still the 40s, because there were lots of little things. Like, he noticed the woman had like 3 piercings on her ear.
Right.
No one in the 40s had multiple piercings up their ear, even though she had taken out the earrings from them. The holes were still there, you know, things like that. And it was well done, and it also gave you an insight into the fact that this character, you know, that's his bag. I mean, he is a reporter. He's not powered, but, I mean, he's got, you know, kind of like, you know, Sherlock Holmesian observational powers, you know, that he can really, or Monk or somebody, you know, take it to a current example. Thought it was well done. And, you know, the other thing is that Captain America thawing out in the 60s, that was only 20 years after the end of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the people and places that Cap knew were still alive. They were older,
right,
but they were still around. Now, this is 60 years after the end of World War II, and it's like pretty much everyone these guys know is dead at this point, which is very different.
Or their girlfriends have remarried and have grandkids.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's way past their prime, so...
Well, and they're really diving into this kind of area with the Captain America in the Ultimates,
mm-hmm.
you know, where a lot of the people he had dealt with in World War II were now, you know, 80, 90-year-old people, and that's much more of a fish-out-of-water type Captain America, too.
That's a very good point, John. I had forgotten about that, but the way that they write Captain America in the Ultimates is very much more a direct parallel to this. I mean, he's a lot bigger a-hole, but, you know, that's beside the point. They have him acting in that book sort of out of character, I think, for what a 1940s person would be, unless they're just like a king jerk from the 40s or something. But
yeah. Now, what did you guys think of Project Superpowers?
I really liked it. I thought it was a neat little take on the and other obscure characters. And it's, you know, so many people on the internet and the blogosphere trying to compare the two quote-unquote teams, and I don't think you can. The only thing they have in common is that they are obscure Golden Age characters. Other than that, the stories that they're going to have and the adventures that they're going to have now are very, very different. But I like it. I like the character of the Fighting Yank, the main protagonist in the first two issues.
Yeah.
And then, oh, what is it? The American Spirit. I thought that is a really, really cool character. And that reminded me of the American Spirit kind of reminds me of a right out of Charles Dickens. Scrooge.
Right.
A Christmas Carol with the ghost looking over his shoulder and telling him what to do and being his conscience. I don't know if you guys picked up on that, but I kind of did.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because the only real kind of tenuous connection I see between the 12 and Project Superpowers is Dynamic Man, who's in both.
Mm-hmm.
Or
You're
a
right.
version,
yeah.
I should say. But other than that, it's a completely different set of characters, a very different style of story. And I would say the thing that this compares most to, or should be compared most to, is Terra Obscura.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, there's such an overlap in the characters. I'm pretty sure they had a Fighting Yank there. I'm pretty sure they had the Green Llama there. I know they had the
Black Terror,
yeah. So, and that's one, if people haven't read it, I really recommend. That was a fun series out of the Tom Strong part of the America's Best Comics.
Nah, I don't remember that. I'll have to go dig that out and find it somewhere. I don't remember getting Terra Obscura. But I kind of didn't get the Tom Strong part of the ABC. I mostly stuck to the top 10 over there. But I have seen a lot of these characters before in other places.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing, you know, Chris, you asked that about the 12. I had never seen any of those characters. I have seen this Daredevil. They call him Devil, but he was originally called Daredevil.
Yeah, they call him
guy,
the Devil. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think he was originally called Daredevil.
Yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, in the 50s. I've actually seen... Go ahead, Bob. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I've seen Black Terror. In fact, I forget what company did it, but I think Dan Brereton, you know, he does the Nocturnals and stuff, he did a Black Terror series back from, I don't know whether it was First or, you know, one of those companies back years ago. And I've seen Green Llama before, dude with the green face.
Mr. Face?
Yeah, the crazy face. I've seen that guy before somewhere. You don't forget that look. This Scarab guy, I mean, he looks identical to the Dan Garrett Blue Beetle.
He does, all right.
Except I guess he doesn't have that fin on his head or something.
Well, I've seen the Daredevil, the 1940s Daredevil. You know, I go to conventions and people are selling his original Golden Age comics, and I've seen him for a couple of years now, and I've never actually had enough money to buy one, but I've thumbed through original Daredevil comics, and they're pretty cool. And I know for a fact that Bill Jordan has covered the Daredevil and I think a couple of these characters on his Golden Age of Comics podcast. And as far as Green Llama goes, him being another more famous one, Heroic Publishing has done a Green Llama series. And don't forget that the Dark Horse Archives are coming out in April.
Yep.
That is going to reprint a couple Green Llama stories from the 1940s or 1950s.
Randy Bowen even made a Daredevil, this Daredevil statue that I've seen.
Well, and Cat and Kitten have shown up in some of the stuff by AC Comics. So, I mean, a lot of these are, again, still, you know, fourth or fifth string characters in terms of, you know, the overall popularity of comics, but are not the long since forgotten types that we're seeing over in the 12.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a couple like Target and the Targeteers, you know, those are new ones on me. But apparently, you know, those masks with the fin on the top, very popular back then.
Who are these, jungle boy looking kind of guy? The guy is just wearing the loincloth. Who is he supposed to be? Is it like Samson or?
Yeah.
That's Samson with the cover over his eyes, right?
I'm just looking on this page that they've got all of them kind of arrayed out.
Yeah, it's Samson's got the blindfold on.
Two pages before the staple in issue zero of Project Superpowers, and he doesn't have a blindfold on.
That is Samson.
Okay. One thing I will say, though, I was really impressed with this Zero issue just because, man, that had like about 28 pages of story in it. And then some extra pages that were, you know, sketches and some, you know, kind of descriptive of who the Green Llama and the Fighting Yank and all these guys were. And it was a buck. You know, a lot of buck issues that come out from people, they're like, you know, 8 or 12 pages long, and there's something that's like subsequently reprinted again in the number one issue. You got a tremendous amount of value out of this, and I know when we did the numbers for January,
this was like third or fourth ranked. Yeah,
yeah, it like really shot up. And I'll say one thing for it: people got their money's worth definitely out of this one. There's bound to be a boatload of these sitting around in stores, given how many that people bought of it. So if you didn't get one, you can go out and get one. It is absolutely worth a dollar.
I think that, yeah, it's totally worth the dollar, and even at the full price, this would have been worth it. So I was expecting a lot less out of the Zero issue.
Yeah, you get more than you get out of a regular $2.99 comic, out of this dollar comic. This is a great value.
Well, it's certainly a much better deal than the $2.99 Zero issue of the 12. I mean, by
That's for
far.
Sure. Yeah.
That was a total waste of money. I was like, yikes.
Well, I thought it was good in the 12 to have the character pages of who the 12 are. But that's not something that was worth the $2.99 in and of itself. And the reprints were just not worth doing.
Yeah, but you know what? You picked up on who they all were just from the way Straczynski did the narrative with the Phantom Reporter in the number one issue. You didn't need the Zero issue.
That's true. That is true.
Whereas the Zero issue of Project Superpowers is essentially the first issue. I mean, it's telling a complete story, and it leads right into number one.
One thing I'm glad that Ross and Kruger are doing over at Dynamite, I'm glad they're not introducing 12 characters all at one time. I mean, they're going to tell the story of the Fighting Yank and his journey. And along the way, he is going to be meeting up his old teammates. And I think that is going to be kind of cool. And I think it's only going to be a 6-issue series, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right.
And then also, when I talked to Joe Ryban over at Dynamite, it was originally, I believe, going to be a 12. They cut it back to a 6. But the other issues that they were planning on doing are going to be special one-shot issues. So we are going to have more than 6 issues. But we might have 2 come out in a year, or 2 come out a month, or 1 come out every 3 months. They're still not sure on that. I think they're going to wait and get the full 6-issue series out to tell the tale and then go into the various one-shots.
Interesting.
And as far as Samson goes, Bob, it's funny you bring him up because he is on the cover of Fantastic Comics, which is another, I don't know if you want to roll into that now, John, but
sure.
It's the Image Comics sort of revival of the Golden Age, but they're doing it in a completely new form, and that is taking what was the next issue in that comic book series that was canceled back in the 1940s. So, for example, the first issue, quote-unquote now, is Fantastic Comics number 24. Fantastic Comics number 23 ceased publication with number 23 back in the 1940s. So here's the next issue. And it's all done in the exact same fashion as you would a 1940s comic. Even with the old ads and the heroes involved and the way they look and the artwork. And it's really quite something. Did you guys have a chance to pick this up?
I looked for it. I could not find it locally. And I had not pre-ordered it.
I actually found it at the local comic shop, picked it up, went through it, noticed exactly what you said, looked at the $5.99 price tag on it, and put it back on the shelf.
Yeah.
It did not appeal to me. It did, you know, it looked like it, you know, was Eric Larson or some Eric Larson clone aping the 40s style, and it just really didn't do anything for me.
Well, that's
I much prefer the modern updating with the nice art that they've got on the 12 and Project Superpowers.
Well, Larson just wrote this week, I believe, on today's being March 13th, he just wrote at Comic Book Resources that he is most proud of this book out of anything coming out of Image right now, which really caught me by surprise. And I don't know if that is because, you know, that's a PR stunt on his side or what, but he really enjoys this book, and there's going to be more, he promises. So we'll see. Well, the next one was supposed to be Crack Comics, I believe.
I will give him the fact that, I mean, if he was going for something that looked like it got published one issue after the previous one back in the 40s or 50s, He was completely successful, so there's something to be proud of in that. I am not a huge fan of 1940s storytelling or art, except in the context that it's giving me some kind of a background about a character that I care about from the silver or modern age. You know, it's like I will wade through the Golden Age DC stuff, because it gives me some insight into the genesis of Alan Scott, Jay Garrick, Batman, Superman, something like that. In and of itself, I'm not a tremendous standalone fan of the Golden Age stuff. And that's what this book kind of was, the Fantastic Comics.
Well, I think I have to disagree there, because if we're looking at a characters like the 12 as a team, and granted they're coming together as a team, and so are Project Superpowers, those stories that we have right now from Marvel and Dynamite are the next chapter for these characters. And looking at Fantastic Comics, this is the next chapter for that character as well, done in that artist's interpretation. So for example, when you see Mike Allred redoing Stardust, right, in the back of Fantastic Comics number 24, that essentially is just chapter 24 of Stardust. It's just a modern twist, not really even a modern twist, but I mean,
that was my problem
with
it though.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that it wasn't the modern twist. And what I'm saying is not that there's anything wrong with that. If you love Golden Age stuff for loving Golden Age stuff, I really don't care for Golden Age comics, except in that they are giving me background information about a character that I care about today. I have never heard of Samson or Stardust or any of these characters, so I don't really care to read a Golden Age story or what looks like a Golden Age story about those characters. See what I'm saying?
It's not invalidating it. So are you looking forward to the Avengers Invaders series coming up?
Well, see, I know and care about all those characters.
Okay.
Right? So, yes. You know, Project Superpowers, I like it because it's a modern storytelling take on a character that I might not have cared about, but I mean, I like modern comics. I guess that's my bias.
That was the wrong question. See, I'm trying to get you. Would you like to see a Captain America story done in the Kirby Simon style that takes place in World War II?
Probably not.
Okay. You've answered my question.
I would agree with that too, because if it's modern people aping the old style, it's not like it's a lost Stan Lee story that they're doing these days, which they've done one or two of or whatever. That's kind of cool.
Yeah,
but
I like reading the old Captain America books purely from the standpoint of the historical significance of them, and given that in the day, right, that was about as good as they did comics. You know, it's like, you know, it.
Isn't
unfortunately, well,
no, I mean, I'm just kidding.
I'm sorry. I mean, I love Kirby and everything, but personally, I think his stuff that he did in the 60s with Marvel blows away the stuff that he did with Simon.
Oh,
that's just my personal preference.
I
would have a bloody fight with Steve Rude on that. I was talking to Steve Rude at PhoenixCon. He loves Jack Kirby, and he was telling me how he preferred Jack Kirby's work. I'm pretty sure he was articulating this to me. I apologize to Steve if I'm misquoting him here. But I'm pretty sure he was telling me about how much he loved Kirby's pre-Marvel stuff. And I just have to respectfully disagree with him on that. But, you know, it's what appeals to different people. You know, some people really love that Golden Age stuff for it being Golden Age stuff. And I think people who love that stuff, they're going to go nuts for something like the Next Issue Project, because it is telling new stories in that vein that they love. Whereas I pretty much like that stuff, as I said, more as a, you know, the historical significance of it, as opposed to liking it for the stories and art in and of themselves.
Now, Eric Larson did that first issue of the Next Issue Project, right?
Well, he's the editor and publisher.
He's the editor, okay. I was wondering if he was doing the art and the story.
I don't know what he's exactly done. He may have done the Samson story.
The Samson story looked Larson.
No, he did, yeah. He did, yeah, it says right here by Eric Larson, yeah.
I was going to say, because I think the next issue thing, that he should go back into the Dark Ages of comics and resurrect Savage Dragon. I mean, he can't even get his own book out on a regular schedule. Does he really need to be unearthing, you know, lost characters and aping the style for an issue, it's like, you know, that's fine and good to a degree, but I don't know, it just seemed to be a odd choice, you know, particularly given that he's got, you know, his own properties these days that are kind of, you know, floundering in terms of the publishing schedule.
Let's put it this way, Chris. What if as the next issue project, they went back and did the next issue of one of these daring mystery comics kind of things, and it was just as crappy of art and, you know, lame and useless a story as you saw in the issues that were published there, you know, and like in and of themselves, wow, that's a real great continuation of that series. But, you know, Samson got hilarious. Canceled at issue number 23 for a reason. Okay.
Yeah, that would be so very funny.
Yeah. Well, and again, I didn't read that Fantastic Comics 24 because I couldn't find a copy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a store here in town, Austin Books, that's very indie friendly. They've certainly heard of Image, and they didn't have it. Or at least, maybe I just didn't find it. But it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't order many because they didn't think they could sell many.
Well, it had a very steep price point on it. That was, I mean, if it was like a $3 book, I would have picked it up for the oddity of it. I looked at it, it was like $6.
Well, here's the other... Here are the other two comics coming up. Now, Fantastic Comics ended with number 23, and this is now number 24, right? The next book due up is Speed Comics, number 9. That means it was canceled with number 8, okay? The next, the third one that is supposed to be coming out is Crack Comics, and this will be issue number 63, which means it was canceled with issue number 62. Now, I have never heard of Speed Comics or Fantastic Comics for that matter. But
interesting that both crack... interesting that both Speed and Crack became drugs. many various types of fans in their own right.
Isn't that funny? Oh, jeez.
But that one, Speed Comics, you said, that ended at issue 8?
Yeah, issue 9 is coming out.
How bad must it have sucked to be canceled after 8 issues back then when people would buy almost anything?
Captain Freedom Strikes, that's on the cover of Speed Comics number 9. So who knows, man?
Well, here I am, you know, bagging on these comics. But you know what? When Crack Comics got canceled at 62, it was probably canceled because it was like sales of like 1.5 million copies or something, you know? Who am I to judge? You know, because they sold so many more comics back then than they sell today. You know, it's like any one of these comics that, you know, just, you know, I'm looking at and saying, oh, this is weak. You know, they probably sold more. That Fantastic, that probably sold more aggregate copies in 8 issues than, you know, some Marvel or DC book sells in 100 issues today or something, you know, so.
Well, and featured in this Fantastic Comics, and then we can move on, is, of course, Samson and then Yank Wilson, Stardust, Space Smith, Sub Saunders, and Captain Kidd. And Stardust, I don't know if you've seen the I Shall Destroy All Civilized Planets cover, but that is on, Stardust is the one who dons the cover of that book, which is, I think, coming out from Fantagraphics, if I'm not mistaken.
Hmm.
So that's been getting some play. So, and that's a Bob Haney character, which is, you know, he's fairly well known.
Yeah. So. Well, it's interesting how these publishers are really diving into the backlist of properties and materials, going for the stuff that just hasn't seen the light of day in some cases for many, many, many decades, and sometimes for good reason, and trying to dust them off and make a go of it.
Are they out of new stories? Are they out of character designs so that they have to go back and dig up these terra obscura characters?
Well, certainly I think for the type of story that Straczynski's trying to tell in the 12, it makes sense to use authentic characters from that time period and displace them into the future. So that I kind of see that, and particularly doing obscure ones. So I don't know that it's necessarily a sign of creative bankruptcy, but it's very interesting to me that, you know, Dynamic Man's showing up a number of times in these things. Black Terror's showing up a number of times in these things. Green Llama seems to be getting a second wind and showing up in a number of places. There seems to be a very select few of these older characters that are just trying to get a toehold and kind of climb their way out of limbo and not quite making it, but, you know, continuing to try, which I find very, very interesting.
Let me pose a question to both you guys, because you may be picking up the title. Do you think that DC is doing it a little bit with Batlash?
I'm not picking that title up, but they are certainly going back to their older characters with Batlash, with Jonah Hex, even resurrecting a lot of the titles from the 80s with, you know, a new version of the Blue Beetles, Booster Gold, Batman and the Outsiders. Marvel's lineup right now is very similar to how it was in the 70s. Miss Marvel, She-Hulk, Nova, Power Man's not got his own title, but certainly making a comeback. So I think there's both almost a cyclical nature to some of this, and also a matter of, well, it worked once before, maybe it'll work again to some of it.
Well, one thing that I find, Chris, I mean, are you reading Batlash?
No, I haven't picked it up, no. But
did you read Batlash before?
No, but it just occurred to me while I was sitting right here just trying to go through my head of what other characters are public domain that DC may own.
Because it's interesting to me
that makes any sense. DC may publish that was once their character, you know.
Well, you know, Batlash, I'm finding that the new Batlash series is really good. Much better than I was expecting it to be. Now, Batlash originally was kind of a lighthearted gambler kind of character. It wasn't like kind of like the hardcore Western type of title. And this new one is kind of like the origin arc of Batlash. You know, he hasn't become that kind of gambler yet. And it's a very good story. Very good story.
Is he in the same universe as Jonah Hex?
Yeah, he has met, you know, all those Western DC characters at some point. I used to love those characters. You know, it's like El Diablo, Jonah Hex, Batlash, and then, you know, some other ones. You know, there's been stories where they've kind of like floated in and out of each other's stories there. So,
you know, another Western hero that just occurred to me is Lone Ranger. There's another one that's come back. And then to an extent, Zorro.
Yeah.
That, of course, that Dynamite is doing, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because, I mean, it doesn't feel like a nostalgia wave at the moment, but a lot of these older properties, like you were just saying, are coming back. But you look at about 5-10 years ago, and we totally hit a nostalgia wave with more of the 80s type properties where G.I. Joe came back, Thundercats came back, Transformers came back, Voltron came back, a number of these things, and Micronauts almost all at once seemed like. So, I mean, from a publishing standpoint, I certainly, if I were going into publishing right now, if I could leverage existing properties and try to cash in on an existing fan base, I would totally try it. Whether I'd be successful or not is another matter, but certainly, you know, it makes sense to go down that road. And, you know, you look at Dynamite in particular, again, with Zorro, with Lone Ranger, and they're being very successful in that area, also in their licensed properties, and now with the Project Superpowers. You know, it just seems like a smart move. And, I mean, sure, some of these characters went away, deservedly so, but that doesn't mean they're bad characters. You know, based on what I've been reading in Project Superpowers, and I'm certainly looking forward to that trade for the Green Llama, there's no reason that character couldn't sustain a monthly title, as well as, if not better than, half the Marvel or DC Universe characters.
You know? Right.
I mean, almost by definition, would do better than, because half of them don't even have their own title.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how a series like The 12 ends, you know, a few months from now, and then to see what is picked up and what is left to be an ongoing something, you know.
Do you think there'll be anything kind of left? Or I'm kind of thinking once the story's over, that's kind of it.
You think? There's always a sequel.
There could be a sequel or whatever, but, you know, I look at the lack of fallout really from the Marvel 1602 stuff. The complete lack of any meaningful contribution to the continuity from the Lost Generation that Marvel did. These things get kind of tossed out there. They're interesting. They're fun. Certainly, in many cases, I'd like to see these characters. Certainly, you know, I think with the 12, there's potential for some interesting stories going forward. I just don't think they're going to go down that way.
You know what? You bring up an interesting point. Something that just came to my mind would be the Agents of Atlas revival from 2 years ago.
Yes, that's another good example.
Yeah.
You know, that was great
stuff.
And
if you don't have that trade paperback, man, or that hardcover, you ought to get it. That is some good stuff. Well worth the money.
I didn't get the hardcover, but I did enjoy the miniseries.
Yeah, I bought the comics. I didn't rebuy it as a hardcover, but I have all the
comics. Well, what was cool about the hardcover, and it's kind of what they should have done with possibly the 12 hardcover, is the same thing. They collected the original six-issue series, and then they collected whether it be the origin story or the first issue or the significant story from each of the agents involved. So, for example, the Jimmy Woo story had his origin from Yellow Claw. It was a really great package, and it was only for like $20-25, and it was as big as a Marvel Masterwork. And you guys should really think about picking that book up.
Well, that one did sound like a really good package and a really good deal for it, because like you said, they put in a lot of cool material. They went all out on that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got anything else, or is that pretty much it?
I'm pretty good.
Yeah, I think that, you know, just in closing, I would just, you know, pretty much all three of these, I was, you know, well, I've loved JSA for a long time, but these other two that are relatively new, I was very pleased at how good they were and would highly recommend that people check them out as something that's very interesting. And they both have done the two new ones, the Project Superpowers and the 12. I thought they both did a really good job of introducing these characters in a way that didn't slow down the story and didn't seem clumsy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would also, particularly if you like the characters in Project Superpowers, I would recommend the Terra Obscura trades. And again, there was 2 6-issue miniseries that Wildstorm did through the ABC line. I would definitely recommend those as well.
I concur. There's not much I can add to that, man. I will say, as far as the Justice Society goes, I would love to see a miniseries of the new, or the, you know, Rick Tyler, Our Man. I think they really, really should do something with his character, whether it be like a 6-issue mini or something. But I really like his character.
Yeah, they've done some good stuff with him, and this, of course, is not the first time he was Our Man.
Right, and he's got a rich history himself.
Yeah, cool. So I think that pretty much does it.
Cool. Thanks, John. Thanks, Bob, for having me on Comic Book Page.
Well, thanks for suggesting the topic. It was a great idea, and certainly if you ever want to come back and talk on other things, we'd love to have you.
All righty.
See, we're just providing evidence that you actually do read monthly comics.
I do.
Just collect the editions.
I had to go to the store and buy them yesterday, but, you know. Just kidding.
So cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.